Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with you. And, of course, we had to bring back the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains for Citizen Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Oh, you know, living the dream out in Iowa. Well, wind's blowing, and we're waiting for some storms to come in.
You know, so you're
basically, I think, same thing we've been doing for about 2 weeks now.
That's the dream. So how's it looking out there? You know, we get all these reports from the FDA, and the USDA, and I don't know. You tell me. You're more into it than I am. What's the story with all these reports?
Oh, I think everyone who's on the whole of USDA is a little high on corn yield kick is right in line with that, right where they should be. Because I think talking to guys out here, talking to guys back where I run the elevator there in Michigan and all these other locations, I'm just not hearing these record corn yields here. A lot of guys are saying, hey, it's good. It's a good crop, maybe as good as a year ago. You know, with the 168 yield, but it's definitely not a 175 is what they're telling me, or a 174.4, I think, is the new number. So, I apologize there.
That's
right. I just don't think it's as good as what the USDA is saying. So, there's talk now, you know, the trade, I think, still around 171, 172. There's some whispers out there now that I think by the time all is said and done come January, we could be closer to a 168. So that would make a big difference in the corn outlook going forward. And soybeans right now, it just depends. If the rain stops, I think you'll be okay. We have had some areas that have been damaged. There's some fields south of me. We got 5 inches of rain last week right here in north central Iowa. And some locations got anywhere from, you know, an additional 3 to 5 inches more than the 5 inches that we got. So there are some spots that are underwater and that just, they won't, beans that won't be able to be cut because they're either gone out of condition already or it won't dry out in time for them. So it'll be interesting to see what happens once the combines roll.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know in Kansas they got a lot of rain too. They're shut down there as well. So
yeah.
Now, you know, but when here's my problem, okay? Now, I knew when I saw the report, I know from my people that nobody was anywhere near those numbers, okay?
Yeah.
Now, granted, I mean, they're not going out to everybody, but, I mean, I don't understand how they come up with these numbers because nobody's near them. So how can they possibly make a statement like that that's pretty much, in my opinion, that's my opinion only, but not true?
Yeah, well, and I mean, that's the question or the therein lies the million-dollar question right now that I've seen a few people discussing. You know, when Reuters or anyone puts out these pre-report estimates, you know, I take it as they're estimating or they're coming out with what the trade is anticipating the report's going to say. Now, there's been some discrepancies there with people saying, oh, no, that's our final number. That's what we think the USDA is going to come up with in the end. You know, so I guess that's maybe where some confusion comes in now, where I think everyone assumes those numbers that you see released, the poll-wise, are the numbers that the trade is anticipating the report to come out at. You know, and if, in fact, last week's 170, I think the trade was at 171 or 172 or something like that going into that report, I don't know where that would come from in the sense of why would the USDA make a 4-bushel adjustment from August to September? So if the trade truly was expecting the USDA to lower yields as the pre-report numbers indicated, I don't know where they would get that. You know, I'm confused as to where that expectation would come from. So yeah, either they're wrong or they're just, I don't know if we're just misunderstanding what numbers they're putting out, but in any direction or any event, it causes a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction afterwards because we have that confusion as to what the trade was anticipating versus what the USDA had to say.
Well, maybe they're the same people that maybe they're the Fed in disguise and they don't know how to report numbers either. What do you think? I mean, I'm pretty critical, but I have to be able to at least put my finger on that it's really happening. And I don't think we're going to be anywhere close to there. But in the meantime, you have prices that are showing they're going to be close to that.
Yeah. Well, that's you're trading accordingly, and you can't, you know, you can't throw a rock without hitting someone upside the head that's going to tell you why the global and domestic outlook on crop prices is bearish. You know, to me, I think we have a lot of things left to prove. I think the crop needs to get in the bin, first off. I don't know if we talked about it the last time or not, but you saw a significant percentage of all of Argentina's crop losses came when, you know, from 2 to 2 weeks ahead of when they were supposed to be harvesting to the end of harvest. You know, they had a good looking crop prior to that, and too much rain caused some significant damage. You know, and I always say that too much rain is one of those things that won't rally the market until it's realized or until the damages are seen. So it's very possible, and what I'm going to be watching is the cash market going forward here. You know, what does basis do at the Gulf? What are local elevators paying in delivery locations? Watch the spreads, and then you'll be able to see. Because if the basis doesn't weaken like people are expecting and the spreads start to narrow up, all of a sudden then I think you're going to see a pretty significant futures rally, because that'll indicate that the crop's not there, you know, as anticipated, which is what we saw last year. Basis didn't widen out as much. And, you know, people will talk right now about SIF values backing off what they're paying in the Gulf or for corn or soybeans or anything like that, or local elevators backing off. And it's, of course they are. It's the pre-harvest weakening of value. I run an elevator. You know, the last thing you're going to do going into harvest is pay too much for grain. And so everyone will weaken and then see what happens with grain flow. And then they have to go from there. And so it'll be interesting to see if the weakening continues in that, or if it strengthens, because if it strengthens, that shows me that either farmers have more capacity to hold grain than the trade expects, or the crop's not there. And I think it'll be more of the latter than the former.
And it could be a little bit of both, but I do believe, I mean, I've said this, you know, I'm on record saying this, so I'm not, you know, this is news. I believe that we're going to see just what we saw last year. You said it, but that's what I've been telling everybody. Hey, you know, if you can store and it doesn't cost you more to store it, you know, again, that's where you have to weigh your overall cost. But if you can put it away and not kill yourself putting it away, then at worst, put it away. But I think you're going to see, you know, not a dramatic rally. Okay. I think we'll see a steadier move. And I think there's a lot of things that'll tie into that factor, which is, you know, the markets, the stock markets, the equity markets are going to have some problems here. And I think they're going to be looking for places to go for yield. And, you know, we're better to go than depressed commodities. What do you think?
Well, I agree. After a while, you run out of bearish things to talk about. And, you know, true, the bear can hibernate over winter or whatever. They'll need to be fed every day, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, after a while, you pencil in every bearish scenario that you can see. And, yeah, I mean, I'm fully anticipating that's how we're set up right now with my customers. If their space concerns are taken care of, if they don't have to ship anything out at harvest, they can store whatever they need to at home, and their cash flow needs are covered. You know, so they have the ability to sit store and wait. We're doing nothing. You know, we may be selling some soybeans here to help with cash flow and things like that. I still anticipate soybeans will rally and they'll get a better price. But, you know, I work with growers directly converting those bushels into cash. So we have to figure out the best way to facilitate them finishing out their year. And that is selling you can sell $9 soybeans and sell a lot less bushels and get a lot more money than selling $3 corn. So we are moving some soybeans right at harvest. But if I have guys that are selling corn at harvest, we're also looking at different option strategies to lock in to help guarantee or protect, you know, help them get involved if there is a rally, because we are anticipating, you know, once harvest really gets rolling, or it may be into the December time frame, but I think we see a pretty significant rally in this market. And the opportunity for guys to sell again.
I agree 100%. This is Angie Setzer, the goddess of greens, goddess of grains, vice president at Grain for Citizens Elevator. And we'll be right back. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Go to libertytalk.fm to download the podcast. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll be right back after the break. It's the time. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of Grains for Citizens Elevator. And Angie, you know, obviously there's a lot of stuff going on in the ag space besides what you and I were talking about in the first segment and the yield and what's going to be there. Now, why, first of all, why is it everybody so against, I guess, Monsanto? I mean, that's the read I get. Is that read correct? And is there a reason for it?
You know, honestly, I will tell you my answer to that is no. I don't understand why everyone's against Monsanto. In a lot of senses, I mean, I know why, in the sense that you have one group that's against them because they envision that GMO, you know, genetic modification is the devil, and you know, it whatever you believe in. Yeah, I mean, there's no proof that I have seen that GMOs can cause damage. But, you know, there is some of the reasoning that Monsanto's brought it on themselves. You know, they went after farmers in the past on basically holding them to contracts. You know, like what you've seen in Argentina with the royalties. You know, you cannot then run their soybean technology and this, that, and the other thing. Is it wrong? No, absolutely not. They have technology. They have the trademark. They have the ability. You know, yeah, you shouldn't sign a contract and then go against it and reuse their soybean seed without paying them again to use it. Is it frustrating for a farmer to have them come after them? Or, I mean, I've seen some guys that have been run seed, have some pretty ugly run-ins with the Monsanto legal department. And so, you know, there's reason out there for it, in the sense that you've heard some horror stories out there. You know, whether or not those horror stories are necessarily not legit, in the sense that if you had a contract, would you expect someone to fulfill it, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, there's been some different things in the past that have affected farmers and their opinion on Monsanto, but from an overall standpoint, should people not like them? No, I think they've done a lot to help increase food production over the year and bring technology to the forefront of agriculture in a lot of ways, and you know, have played an important role. I don't understand why people hate them quite as much as they do, but they sure do. I don't know. It evokes a lot of emotion when you bring it up.
I understand. And so my real question again would be, don't you think, I mean, Monsanto is obviously huge, and they've got a big deal going on right now. But don't you think that when it comes to farmers, that you need to have a little bit more ease on some things? I mean, I'm not saying that they should let them beat a contract or whatever, but I'm just saying that, you know, we all know how much it costs to be a farmer, right? I mean, we know at the end they can make money, but you're starting out pretty deep in the hole, right? I mean, you know, it costs a lot of money to put that stuff in the ground. And when things aren't going well, don't you think that maybe that, you know, there should be some deals worked out, like, you know, just in case? I mean, you know, they're big enough to take it down and help you out. Yeah. I mean, don't you think they should be? I guess my question is, and I don't want to put you in a bad spot, so, I mean, you know,
no,
I understand.
No, you're not.
Don't you think that they should be a little bit more reasonable about some of these contracts and maybe try to help out a little bit once in a while, because at the end, it will bring them more money anyways?
It's one of those deals where, you know, and I'll be honest and I'll speak from experience, bad news travels far faster than good. So if you come in and you're a jerk to someone unnecessarily, or you treat someone in a way that they feel is unfair, they're going to let everyone know in their inner circle, and then everyone in there, and, you know, the people who they told circle is going to know, and et cetera. It spreads. So you really got to tread a fine line, and you do want to help guys out as much as you can. In any way that you can to get ahead. The hard part is it's human nature, you know, to take an inch and then expect a mile kind of deal. So what you run into after a while is, where do you draw the line? And so it's hard. I mean, it's we have this discussion constantly in my company, because we sell agronomic products, you know, we sell inputs and we do financing and we work with guys on deferring payments. You know, we help them get their spring inputs and don't expect payment on it until the fall. You know, so we do a lot of different things with growers where we try to help out as much as we can. And you find that there's certain ones in every crowd that take advantage. And you never know which guys are going to be the ones to take advantage until they're taking advantage of you. So next thing you know, you're setting up new rules to try to avoid being taken advantage of, and you keep moving the line. And before you know it, you can't. We're in this situation right now. We like to try to help guys out with advances, with deferred on inputs, things like that. Well, now things are getting really ugly for some, unfortunately, some people out there. And we're starting to see that the people that we thought could be the best customers that we could work with, or that would, you know, never think to tell us one thing and do another, are actually surprising us in some way. Now, I'm not saying that's in everyone, or I'm not trying to make a blanket statement, but being the devil's advocate, I can see where you wouldn't want to have a gray area, because what happens is that it's either all gray or it's not. But at the same time, you know, I have had it to where the legal department comes in and they want all records for a guy, you know, his wife, his daughter, you know, his grandfather, you know, just everything like that. And they're intimidating and scary. So I can see why it would be, you know, I see both sides from where I sit. Definitely pretty clearly.
And I understand that, because one of the problems I have in general, this has nothing to do with my Seattle, but I hate all these regulations that everybody has.
Yeah.
Okay. And I hate, I'm not going to name the organizations, but I'm not sure you can figure out who they are. And everybody else that's listening knows what I'm talking about, but they tend to pick on the small guy. Okay.
Yeah.
They can't go after the big guy, because the big guy will tell them to go fuck off. Oops. Sorry.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, no, you don't have to be sorry. It's true. And you see it. I think you see it in agriculture, unfortunately, a lot too, to where the big guy will tell them to F off. You know, and so they do go after the small guy. So I won't argue that at all. And, you know, the one interaction that I had, it was right when I first started trading grain. You know, the guy probably had maybe 200 acres of soybeans total. You know, so I don't really know from a royalty standpoint how much it would cost them for them to bin run, because I don't know how many units, you know, how many bushel would you put on 200 acres? It couldn't be a lot. Maybe 600, 700, 800 bushel, something like that. And they wanted every single piece of information about this guy they could get, because they needed to prove that he had basically stolen from him. Yeah. Is that overkill? Yeah. Does that, you know, is that where some of their negative opinion comes from? Definitely. And so it's one of those things, like I said, where I see both sides, in the sense that any little bit is a lot to some companies. But at the same time, definitely don't have to, you don't have to be the bully. So that's been the hard part, is sometimes they're the bullies, and so they get the rightful sort of negative feel that comes with being a bully, I guess.
No, I mean, like I said, I look at it and I watch, and, you know, we got something going on with Wells Fargo right now, okay, in the equity business, right? So... Now,
yeah.
I said on Fox the other day, I said, look, they do it all the time. This is not
this new.
This is not new. They just got caught, so now they're going to pay a fine. But nobody's going to jail, and nobody's going to be done. They're going to be done with it, just like J.P. Morgan was with the whale trade a number of years ago. So at the end of the day, who cares? I mean, they don't care. They've already stolen so much money, so what's another couple of bucks? You know, they'll pay off the fine and be done and keep the money. But now when they go to the low-hanging fruit, which is the farmer, I mean, first of all, a farmer doesn't have the time to jerk around with all this stuff, and then you have to hire a lawyer. Yeah. And before you get done, it's like, where am I going? And you can't do anything.
Oh, yeah.
That's what bothers me. What about you?
Oh, no, I agree completely. I mean, and that's the thing, is that there's been a predatory attitude towards the farmer, I would say, for a century or more. You know what I mean? It started in you could go back as far as the 20s. You can go back as far as when the Chicago Board of Trade was developed. You know, you can say that it was developed to have the farmer's risk in mind. No, it was not developed to have the farmer. Yes, it has been a tool in which we can offset risk and do the things that we need to do, but it wasn't developed to help Joe Farmer in central Oklahoma figure out how to sell the wheat that was piled up outside his elevator. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And so, you know, you look back at the Depression with all of the banks that took over farms, and lines of credit that have been written, and different tactics that have been done. You know, right now, I would argue that there are a lot of companies out there that are loaning money to young farmers right now, or allowing them to basically get more rope to hang themselves with, and they don't care. because they're going to end up back with that piece of equipment in their hand. They're going to get the interest that's paid.
Hold that thought. That's a great thought. I want to get into that more. This is the Bubba Show. Bob Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, vice president at Citizens Elevator. This is the Bubba Show. Bob Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, you were talking about exactly what goes on with the whole banking system. So, go ahead and finish your thought, and then I'm gonna chime in too.
Well, I wrote about it a couple weeks ago, and one of the things I talked about with my guys or with the customers or whoever's reading my column on Pro Farmer was stop. Just because someone will loan you money doesn't mean you should borrow it. And we saw it in the, you know, with the housing crisis in 2008 and 2009 and all of these homes that were basically 120 to 200% mortgaged against the equity. And I think you're seeing a lot of that right now taking place in agriculture, where we are giving loans out to people who can't afford to pay them back. And it concerns me greatly that it's allowing some young farmers to think that they'll be able to make their way through this, and eventually they'll find themselves buried and will be back into, you know, and maybe this is over dramatic to say, but I definitely am concerned that you could see something similar to the, you know, the 1930s farm crisis. I haven't done a lot of studying on the 1970s, 1980s farm crisis, but I look back at the Dust Bowl and the things that happened there where family farms that had been in the family for 100 years are suddenly owned by the bank. And, you know, there I have some concern out there because at this point in time, there's a lot of incentive or a lot of reasons as to why these big banks or these big conglomerates out there would love to own this farmland or some of these other things that the farmers are holding as equity in it. It concerns me that we're going to see some guys get in real deep, and if these prices don't turn around, we could see some really nasty developments take place in the heartland as a whole.
Well, I mean, that's because the banks get to steal the property. I mean, you know, you remember the old game, steal the old man's bundle? Well, no, this is what happens. You know, this is the whole banking system, the fractional reserve and all that. So they keep lending. And then when you can't pay, they try to get less, and they keep taking their interest. And then eventually when you have to default, well, now what would be better than to own, you know, farmland that's already depressed in price, even though in a lot of areas it's very high because it's the only place people are investing right now. But this is where they get you, because they let you get deep in enough. And if you can pay them, then you keep paying the interest and you never get out. And then eventually you have to give up. And that, to me, is a bigger problem in this whole system. And that's where, you know, it goes back to Monsanto, who steps on these guys. And again, it's always the low-hanging fruit that allows themselves to get into trouble because, you know, they're struggling to get by. And you do things And that's where I have a problem with the entire financial system. As you know, you've talked to me, you've read this before, but you have a banking system that is allowed to basically create money. Now, why is the bank allowed to create money? I have no idea. It's bad enough that the Fed creates money, but now you have the you allow the banks to loan out at 9 times. They're also in effect creating money, which eventually is going to cause a bigger problem. And so going back to these regulators and these all these reports, to me, it's a bunch of, pardon the pun, but it's a bunch of hogwash. I mean, we get them and nobody's got a clue. And where do we go from here?
Well, I don't think we go anywhere. That's the unfortunate thing. I mean, I really don't know what we do because this has been going off the track. So this isn't something, I always love when people start to discuss the problems that we have in government today as though it just began, in the year 2000 or the year 92 or whatever it may be. This is a system that we've been building for over 100 years now. And the people that have put it into practice knew what they were doing. They have benefited themselves, not to get overly political, but look at the Clintons. Look at their net worth from the time that they took office in 1992 to now, and their public servants. How is that, so you tell me what they're servicing or how they're servicing it. It's the same thing. The banks have put powerful lobbyists in place, and we've allowed our laws basically to be written by whoever is going to pay the most money and our regulations have been put in place just the same way. And here we are. So here we sit. And I don't know how you begin to change it unless you really get away. I mean, the first thing I think we need to do is abandon the two-party system as we know it. But that's me. I think the Republicans and Democrats are cut from the same cloth. Again, I'm trying to avoid getting too far into the political realm of it, but it's a deep infested wound or infected wound that we're dealing with right now, and I don't know how you fix it, because it's always going to be the low hanging fruit. It's always going to be the people that can't necessarily look out for themselves. They believe that they're working with someone that's looking out for them, or has their best interest in heart. And when it comes down to it, I think it gets a lot worse before it gets better, unfortunately. And I don't know how it gets better.
Well, that's funny, because I'm from the system. I believe that when there's trouble in the world, the politicians are, I can't say they're all crooks, but to me, the big percentage are crooks. And you can talk about the Democrats and Republicans, and both parties are broken, no matter which side you side with. They're both broken. And what happens is they come out there with they're sweating and, oh my God, what are we going to do? We have a debt ceiling. We got whatever problem they want to come out with. And then they go back in the back room. They get out a bottle of scotch. They smoke a cigar and they say, well, how are we going to screw the American people today? Because at the end of the day, we pay for all the crap that they go through.
Well, on top of that, who cares? Do you think they honestly care about our best interests when they know that they're going to be taken care of until death?
They could care less.
The best gig in the whole wide world is to get in the House or Senate.
Well, why? Because you don't have to follow the same laws as everybody else's, because you don't have Social Security, because you get a pension for life, because you don't have to worry about sexual assault charges. Should I go on?
There's no concern. So the thing that amazes me most about the world right now is the country in general, I guess you could say, is our third party candidate perfect? No, but we're never going to find a perfect candidate. Let's call a spade a spade here. We have the perfect opportunity now to abandon the two-party system and tell them enough is enough, and that we want to fix the corruption that's going on, and we truly want an outsider, not someone that just claims to be one, and yet people will refuse to acknowledge or support. It's like yesterday we discussed the TPP, the trade policy. No matter your opinion on it, Big Ag, the Farm Bureau groups and the quote-unquote advocates of the world out there want the TPP to pass, because anytime we have free trade, they feel it's good trade. That's the end of sentence. We have one candidate that supports TPP, and Big Ag is still not lending support behind. So it amazes me so many times. We actually have an opportunity, I feel, to maybe turn the country in a different direction, in a good one, and I don't think we'll take it, because we're just cattle being led to slaughter. I mean, the majority of the population is thinking they're truly making a choice by choosing between a Republican or a Democrat, and the truth is they're just the same wolf and different clothing, in my opinion.
I do not disagree with you at all. I think that this is the problem. And this goes back to, see, I believe that the president should be a 1 6-year term. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it should be a CEO they're going to pay instead of giving. Again, you don't be president for the money because you get plenty of money anyways. But I believe they should give a guy $10 million a year to run the country like a business, because the United States of America is a business, in my opinion. I don't know what your opinion is. In my opinion, this is a business, and it's the biggest business in the world. So why wouldn't you run it like one?
Well, it needs to be ran like one. That's strictly their job. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, the government was invented or put together because we needed someone to be able to handle the foreign, your business aspect, your trade, your things that the businesses themselves are going to handle it. But the country has to be able to oversee that and protect our borders, and that's it. That the government does not need to be in the business of telling me what I should pay for health insurance. The government does not need to be in the business of telling me who I should have in my bedroom. You know, and the problem that we've allowed so much now is that the government has slowly creeped in further and further and further. We don't know what it's like to not have them up our asses.
Well, that's they're controlling everything. And there you have it. That is one more thing. The politicians, they don't have to have Obamacare either. They get their own health insurance policy. So that's why I wrote to have the 28th Amendment. But we have all these things going on, and again, the direction is it always hurts the middle class, which is why the middle class is getting wiped out. Now, I want your opinion. Is the middle class getting wiped out? You would know more than I do because you're in it all the time, and that really is truly what the middle America is the middle class. Are they getting wiped out? Am I nuts?
Yeah. Oh, they're getting wiped out. They're getting disenfranchised. They're getting... you know, every time they turn around, there's something else that is a nail in the coffin. You know, our cost of living continues to increase exponentially, yet the fact remains that you can't afford to increase your labor costs. Businesses can't, because their cost of doing business is so much higher than what it was. You know, for us right now, as a company, we have to debate how we're going to handle our health insurance costs going forward. You know, we used to have an a la carte plan as a company where we'd offer up each employee got $7,000 a year, whatever they bought with that from a health insurance, dental insurance, vision insurance, whatever it may be, was their choice. However they covered their family was their choice. If they were single, they still got $7,000. If they were married, they got $7,000. And, you know, and if they were short, which was very rare, because at that point, you know, when I first started with the company 6 years ago, that covered quite a lot. If they were short, they had to kick in a little bit. If it was more than what their insurance costs were, they got it in their check. And now we look at it, and not one of our employees can make ends meet insurance-wise on that. So we have to kick in that much more. And in the meantime, regulatory standards and things of that nature continue to change. You know, for us even, we're a small... private, you know, we're one of the very few private companies our size that function the way we do in our state, and we look at it and we wonder how we're going to be able to afford to stay in business over the next 5 to 10 years some days, just because the margins continue to get slimmer and the cost of doing business continues to get higher.
This is hold on, honey. This is Angie Setzer, Goddess of Grains. This is Todd Bubba Horowitz, The Bubba Show. We're going to step out of a break. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the Goddess of Grains, and also the Vice President at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, we know that the healthcare is a mess. We know there's just so many issues. And again, I continue to say that they do not have our best interest at heart and that they pick on the low-hanging fruit. But now we've got other problems that I see in this industry. The Monsanto Bayer deal, I don't think is a good deal. And that, I have no opinion on Monsanto because I don't know enough about them to say good or bad. Okay, I've been told bad. But again, now you've got, but you're going to make another big conglomerate here. And then you've got Agrium and Potash getting together now.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that when you start eliminating competition, you bring too big to fail into the equation. That does nobody any good, especially the little guy. What do you say?
Oh, I agree completely. And, you know, when it comes down to it, I'm not a huge fan of the Bayer Monsanto. And there's a lot of guys, you know, you look at the percentage of ownership or the percentage of holdings of royalties and different things like that once Bayer and Monsanto get together, and they will be holding up to half, I believe, of the chemical industry that we see in agriculture. And so that's concerning in the sense that they can work in ways to kind of limit supply or change costs and things like that, and that will always be a concern. The potash agrium is what scares me the most, you know, because you're not finding new sources of phosphates and things of that nature, which is what those two companies are providing. You know, we're unfortunately, it goes back to the regulations. In Michigan, we used to have a potash mine. If we do have one, it is, its ability or its output has been cut, if not in half, you know, two-thirds or more. It used to be you'd get potash out of north of Grand Rapids, and now, like I said, because of regulations and different regulatory standpoints, it's been shut down. So we import the bulk of our potash out of Canada, which is where these two companies are from. They have the ability to, and you're already seeing discussion, is they will limit their output of phosphates, and your ability to import from elsewhere, you know, perhaps China is our next source or something like that. Your ability to make the imports that you need ends up quite limited, and it puts us in a really sticky situation. So the Paradigm Channel is concerning, and I think that gets a lot of attention because everyone knows Monsanto and everyone knows Bayer, but the potash agrium concerns me. The Syngenta, China, or whatever, the Chemco or whatever over there in China, that one concerns me too. And so, yeah, it's getting to the point of, you know, the too big to fail is frightening in and of itself. And I think that shows you just how hard it is out there for these small groups, you know, similar to us, our company or anyone else from the input side of things, you know, it's hard to function. So this whole entire idea of living on slim margins isn't working. So everyone wants to increase their what they're selling. So they're all getting together, and then you're going to see a significant amount of layoffs, I believe, too, and things of that nature with both Potash Agrium and Bayer Monsanto. And it's really going to stick it to the little guy, unfortunately. But how do you... If the government steps in, then that's great. I mean, they did with the Deer Precision Ag sale. They've stepped in so far, but I guess we'll see what they do, because it is going to hurt the little guy in the years ahead.
I'm just concerned that the bigger we get, the harder it is to make change. And I truly believe that there's going to be another revolution in this country. Because right now we're going through the same things that in 1776, you know, that they went through, overtaxation. All these things that don't allow the average guy to succeed. We've taken away the ability. They can't borrow money from the bank, okay? And you know, I don't know what your opinion is, but the collapse in cattle a couple of weeks ago and now the hogs, I'm saying, my opinion is, those guys are getting a tap on the shoulder from the bank saying, either come up with more money or sell out now. We don't want you to go in any deeper in debt. And I think that's a problem.
Oh, yeah. They will be. You're seeing it. I talked to a customer this morning that is a seed salesman, and he called up one of his dairy customers to talk about where his money was. He hadn't been paid for the spring's input, and the dairy customer said, at this point in time, I'm borrowing money every month just to keep in business.
So
cannot continue to do that, and eventually the other shoe drops.
And this becomes a far bigger problem that nobody cares about, and that I care about it, and you care about it, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
If you thought the drop in the price of oil concerned you because of the investments in oil, agriculture, I would contend, has the ability to have two times the effect of the oil concerns that we saw. If you see a continuation, because you're not only going to see it impact the equipment dealers like you did in oil, but you have the bankers, the investors, you have the little old grannies that were relying on rent money. You know, it could be all over the place, really, when it comes down to it.
I agree with you 100%. I think that it's a big mess. And of course, and we're going to have to eat. You know, there is alternative energy, but there isn't alternative food yet. So, that could be a much bigger problem, you know, as we go. And to me, that's where I think we make just a tremendous amount of mistakes, because we're letting banks become too big. Because even the banks, you know, the little community banks that used to, you know, you could get a loan on a handshake. from the little bank. Now it's they've got so many regulations that they can't fight it either, which is goes back to, I think we opened up with this, that they're screwing them because they can't compete with the bigger banks. And I think that that ruins everything. When you don't have competition, you can't allow people to grow. You then destroy the actual free market society that we have. What do you think?
Yes. Oh, I agree. I agree completely, and that's what we've been doing. I mean, that's what you see. It started with the, what, with the telephone?
Yeah.
It started with electricity. You know what I mean? It really did. The government or he with most money has decided which industries or which companies have grown and which ones have failed. And unfortunately, that's what happens. And I always get a little frustrated when people refer to our economy as a capitalist. It's not. It's a corporatist. It is built for corporations. And every time you see new regulation come into play is another time that you're allowing the big dogs to stay in business and further hurting the little guy when it comes down to it.
No, actually, it would be more socialism, but either way, I mean, what they're doing is they're taking some of the wealth and giving it to people on through entitlements, and they're destroying the people that should have the power, which is the middle class, because no economy operates freely without the middle class, because the middle class are the spenders, they are the borrowers, and they're the ones that stimulate all economies, which, of course, farmers are the key to that. So what's your outlook for the next, let's say 6 months?
I think that we see the price of corn recover. I think we see the price of soybeans stay relatively steady. I think wheat improves a bit. I anticipate corn to get back up into that 385 range before it goes off the board one more time, and soybeans to test $10, I think. I wouldn't be surprised to see July 2017 we get up above $5 again as well. I mean, I don't think the price is going to stay low forever, because I think at some point, like I said, all of the bearishness is going to be played in, and someone's going to decide it's not a bad time to buy. And with the fund short positions that we've got going on in corn and wheat, I think then you Katie bar the door type deal. But it'll probably be quick. And so the guys that have plans in place or are proactive about their marketing and don't sit and wait, because sometimes the best opportunity doesn't mean that it's one that a customer is happy with. I've gotten a lot of criticism for telling guys to do different things. And last year I recommended guys lock in basis early on. It worked out perfect. It would have been the best thing for them to do. And you still had guys in Nebraska that refused to acknowledge the giant grain piles sitting outside their ethanol plant. They keep thinking the price has to firm up for them, and that's not the case. But those who are smart and have a plan and are proactive about their marketing will be fine. They'll be smart about their expenditures. They're not going out buying new equipment. They're not going on vacations anymore. They're not buying new pickups. And, they'll make it through and they'll pick up the...
Angie Setzer, the goddess herself, Vice President of Grains Elevator, or Citizens Elevator, excuse me. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure when you miss an episode, libertytalk.fm gets you the download. We'll see you back here on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Have a great weekend. Enjoy football, and we will see you back here on Monday. Take care.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.